Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia on the 7th of May 2016. Welcome aboard. Truth News Radio Australia is a homegrown product brought to you by myself, Herewood Fenton, and I try to do something original every week. I try to look at important issues going on in the world and give you my insights, and I try to back up everything I say with some semblance of research and some consideration for what are real sources or what are reliable sources. One thing we often find both with mainstream media and with many alternative media sources is that people tend to stick with that which supports their kind of tribal affiliations in terms of looking for information. Now, I often have my own insights, and I do, I think as everyone does, and as is a common feature of research, I tend to have insights or thoughts, or you might call them hypotheses, and I look for support for the hypothesis. Now, sometimes that can actually lead a person down the wrong path, because if you become too attached to a pet theory, you can just focus on information that supports that to the exclusion of everything else. And indeed, I may be at times guilty of that. But what I'm not guilty of is simply adhering to groupthink positions, which is so common these days, and it is something that is so frustrating and makes it very difficult to get any clarity on almost any topic. My perspective crosses the line constantly between what are normally considered to be left-wing or right-wing positions. These labels are largely meaningless to me. I do have some appreciation for the word libertarian. I respect that concept, although even with libertarianism, I find that a lot of the positions that libertarians take are somewhat ideological and somewhat locked in to a point of view, which doesn't even truly reflect the nature of what a libertarian philosophy would indicate. And typically with that, I often advocate things that some people think would be on the opposite spectrum, on the opposite end of the spectrum to what I have supported in the past. And one such example is Donald Trump. And I'm going to be talking about Donald Trump a fair bit today, but I'm going to be talking about some other issues connected to Trump. But first, I'd like to clarify my statements on Trump. I began looking at Trump around about February this year. I had not really paid much attention to it. And my initial feeling about Trump was that he was just another one of the players, another puppet, another phony participant in a phony rigged game. And then I looked at some of his more controversial statements, and that also, well, some actually surprised me a little bit because they were so extreme. And then as I saw his popularity was growing, I decided to actually research more and watch some of his speeches. And the more I looked at this man, the more I realised that that everything he does breaks the mould of what political aspirants do in America and around the world. He doesn't use a teleprompter. He doesn't follow polls. He doesn't use focus groups. He's extremely individual, extremely maverick. And this is a reality. This is not just spin. I mean, it's been proven from many different angles that this is actually the way he operates. So whatever you might say about him, you can't say that he's just a puppet. He is extremely eccentric in a lot of ways. and including the controversial positions that Trump has taken, they're kind of off the spectrum in terms of acceptability, which is something that the normal political aspirant would never do. For example, his position on torture, where he said, you know, not only should Americans not be rolling back torture, they should be increasing torture, you know, and he'd like to see nastier things being done to terrorists and, you know, bring back waterboarding and more. Now, of course, I think that's an appalling idea, and I'm totally against it. And if that were all there was to Trump, then I would say, you know, well, he's just some sort of nut and probably would never come close to becoming president anyway. But what I've seen with Trump is that he's extremely good at manipulating public opinion. He's doing it on his own. And he's, I think, outsmarting a lot of the people who've tried to shut him down. And his extremely controversial position on torture and on Muslims is one such example, where rather than sort of playing the safe game and just staying within the range of acceptable public opinion, he's gone right out on a limb. Now, I don't think Trump can be trusted, and this is a very important point to understand. The statements that Trump is making, especially in the early phase of presidential campaign, he can't be trusted on any of those. But he's making these statements to mark him out, to draw attention to him. Most of what Trump says is you know, the significant things about what Trump is actually bringing to the table in politics are far different and far more interesting than these one-off oddball extreme statements, which get all the attention. You know, some purportedly sexist things that he's said, such as Hillary Clinton playing the woman's card and a bunch of things like that. And these have drawn so much attention, but they're such trivial parts of Trump's position and so easily discarded, right? I mean, the position on torture, it can't be maintained. It's not going to be maintained. But bear in mind, under most of the presidents in recent decades, torture has been taking place, has been doing so covertly, and that is a bad thing, right? So what Trump has done in simply actually making this a public discussion is actually far preferable to the kind of Orwellian playing around with words and meanings that the Bush administration got into. And in the end, you know, Trump said, well, you know, we'll abide by the rule of law. We won't do anything that is actually unlawful. Well, wow. You know, thank you, Donald Trump, for saying that. That's actually a step forward. But let's get past the torture stuff, right? Let's get into the really important issues. And the most important one, the one I want to focus on most today, is tariffs. And I've done a bit of research and uncovered something very interesting. The history of tariffs in the United States under various governments. And I've got an article here from Wikipedia. Not always my favorite source of information, but often quite valuable. Tariffs in United States history have played important roles in trade policy, political debates, and the nation's economic history. The main goal of the tariff was money to pay the federal budget. Controversy arose over whether manufacturing interests were favored and consumer interests hurt by high tariffs. The first United States Congress, wanting a straightforward tax that was not too onerous and easy to collect, passed the Tariff Act of 1789. Treasury agents collected the tariff before goods could be landed, and what became the Coast Guard prevented smuggling. Tariffs were the largest, approaching 95% at times, source of federal revenue until the federal income tax began after 1913. Now, let me just repeat that last sentence. Tariffs were the largest source of federal revenue until the federal income tax began after 1913. For well over a century, the federal government was largely financed by tariffs, averaging about 20% on foreign imports. Now, this is extremely important, and extremely important to understand how this has changed over time. I've got a graph here that's also published on the Wikipedia article that shows tariffs from 1784 to the present. And they started off very high, close to 90-100%, dropped down to about 50% in the middle of the 19th century, and then began steeply declining through into the 20th century, with one brief resurgence of tariffs, which I'll get into in a minute. But then from about 1910 onwards, it just went down, 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 and almost really to zero by the early 1950s. And of course, this coincides with the modern era, the era of globalization, the era of what they call free trade. Now, all of the presidents, all of the policies of the rulers of the United States going back to the end of World War II have adopted this aggressive free trade policy. There have been some who've tried against it, but they have not had much success. The John Birch Society and some groups like that that tried to make a bit of a resurgence in the 1960s with Barry Goldwater as the presidential candidate, but in the end it didn't succeed. Now let me just return to the subject of that early period in the 20th century when there was a bit of a jump there in tariffs. This was under a president who is not talked about very much, and I think it's something very important here that that conspiracy theorists need to turn their eyes upon. His name was President William McKinley, and he was assassinated. And he was assassinated not long after having brought in changes to policy which would have increased tariffs on foreign imports. And I'll bring you more on that when we come back from the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's a great pleasure to be with you today. I'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. And I was just about to tell you a little about William McKinley, US Prime Minister, born 1843, died September 14, 1901, the 25th President of the United States. He was assassinated in September 1901, 6 months into his second term. McKinley led the nation to victory in the Spanish-American War and raised protective tariffs to promote American industry and maintained the nation on the gold standard in a rejection of inflationary proposals. Now, as we noted before the break, the federal income tax was brought in only in 1913, and the federal income tax ended up becoming the predominant way that the United States government raises money. And from that point, tariffs just declined and declined and declined. But isn't this interesting? Because, you see, income tax, which we all think of as a sine qua non of a modern democracy, really only has its origin a little over 100 years ago. And guess what? There are other ways of governments funding themselves. And this method of tariffs is one of the ones that worked for a very long period of time. And this is why, folks, that that Donald Trump now saying he wants to raise tariffs, this, I believe, is incredibly important. This should be really on the radar of libertarians and people who understand the deceit and the basically the theft that is represented in the taxation system, should understand that this this concept of tariffs is so important. And it gets denigrated with labels like protectionism, as if it's some sort of backward, regressive thing to do, when in fact it is the necessary thing that countries do to protect their sovereignty. And a lot of countries around the world still have high trade tariffs. And guess what? Those are countries that have maintained their sovereignty. But the globalist powers, which are just really giant corporations that operate in many, many different countries, they're not interested in sovereignty. It doesn't help them at all. In fact, it hurts them. Countries that strongly maintain their sovereignty erode the power of mega corporations and banks. So, again, when we see Donald Trump threatening to bring in trade tariffs, you can really understand why the establishment, why the mainstream media, why so many different parts of the apparatus of modern Western democracies have been saying, you know, Donald Trump must be stopped at any cost. Donald Trump must be shut down. Now, let's just have another look at William McKinley. McKinley campaigned heavily in 1896 on the high tariff as a positive solution to depression, promising protection and prosperity to every economic sector. He won a smashing victory. The Republicans rushed through the Dingley tariff in 1897, boosting rates back to the 50% level. Now, McKinley was ultimately assassinated by an anarchist of Polish descent by the name of Leon Czolgosz. I might be pronouncing that name wrongly. The assassination took place on September 6, 1901, at the Pan American Exposition. Czolgosz went to the exposition armed with a 32 caliber revolver he had purchased 4 days earlier. He approached McKinley, who had been standing in a receiving line inside the Temple of Music, greeting the public for 10 minutes. At 4:07 p.m., Czolgosz reached the front of the line. McKinley extended his hand, and Czolgosz slapped it aside and shot the president in the abdomen twice. Now, the president did not die straight away. He was actually operated on. Then an infection developed in the wound, and he died 8 days later. Now, there is not a lot of conspiracy speculation on the internet about the assassination of McKinley, but the evidence is there that is quite strong that this was a conspiracy, and there are so many indicators to it. Firstly, I mean, let's just talk a little about anarchism, because the anarchy or anarchists, at that period of time, around about the turn of the 20th century, were involved in a lot of high-profile assassinations around the world. And in many ways, the anarchists of that period served the same function that modern Islamic terrorists served in terms of providing false flag scenarios and indeed reasons for government and military and power bases to increase their powers and also to bolster their support from the general public. And this is by no means a modern idea either. It was understood, there were people thinking about this and writing about it at the time, that indeed anarchists were being used in this way, in a cynical way. And there's a very famous novel written by the giant of English literature, Joseph Conrad, which I strongly recommend to you. It's called The Secret Agent, and it is indeed, it is about a type of a false flag, a terrorist attack, which was actually engineered in the UK. It's a fictional story, but it's a fictional story based on Conrad's understanding of politics and what was going on at that time. And indeed, it is about a false flag terrorist attack, which is actually to be used by the powers that be to denigrate the anarchists, to give them more power, to bolster their impression in the general public's mind. Very interesting novel and a very interesting insight and an early exposé on what we've come to understand as false flag terrorism. Now, just getting back to the subject of McKinley, McKinley was involved in the Spanish-American War, and this was heavily pushed by William Randolph Hearst. But McKinley had been less than eager to get involved in it and had been keen to sort of press for more evidence as to why the Maine was sunk. McKinley was doing things with maintaining the gold standard and with these trade tariffs, which were major impediments to what we see now, you know, with the hindsight of 100 years, as being, you know, the essential agendas of globalists. And when I say globalists, what do I mean? I just mean people who are extremely rich and powerful, part of a type of a cabal of interests, where they're basically smashing the concept of sovereignty, creating new types of power for themselves, which extend well beyond the borders of nations and kind of make them immune from politics and make them able to be kind of like puppet masters controlling things from far, far above. Now, of course, it's not only the globalist oligarchy which is very concerned about Trump's tariffs. Of course, the Chinese government is quite alarmed, and I've got an article here from The Guardian from May... 5th of May, 2006. State media says Republican attacks China to woo voters. China urged people in the United States to take a rational and objective view of the relationship between the two countries after Donald Trump became the Republican Party's presumptive presidential nominee. And I'll get more into that when we come back from the break with Truth News Radio Australia. Stay with us. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And today I'm talking about Donald Trump and trade tariffs. Article here from The Guardian. Trump has proposed that tariffs on imported Chinese goods be increased up to 45%. I mean, that's a staggering increase. And it harks back to the McKinley era. We have to go back 120 years to get back to something like that in American history. And he has asserted that China has waged economic war against the United States, taking American jobs. China is the United States' largest trading partner. And I think also vice versa. I think the United States is certainly one of the larger trading partners of China. Asked whether China was worried at the prospect of a Trump presidency after his commanding win in Indiana, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Hong Lei said an election was an internal affair he could not comment on. What needs to be pointed out is that the essence of Sino-US trade and business cooperation is mutually beneficial and win-win, and accords with the interests of both sides. We hope people in all fields can rationally and objectively view this relationship. The official Xinhua news agency said Trump gets them wrong from trade balance to basic economics, citing Western media and academics dismissing his criticisms of trade with China. Now, of course, we can't be sure that Trump will honour his commitments, as I've said. But if he does, if he were to bring in trade tariffs of up to 45% with China, this would really fundamentally change the world. It would change the geopolitical power balance of the entire planet. It would provide an opportunity for income taxes in the United States to be massively lowered. It would seriously dent China's economic power in the world, and with that, China's military power. Although it may provoke China to become more aggressive in a military sense if their economic hegemony were threatened in this way. And that's something we have to be very keenly aware of, that the risks here are quite considerable. But, you know, the risks of maintaining the status quo are pretty bad too. Because what's happening with the way things have been going with the Bushes and the Clintons and Obama and just this left-right duopoly in the way American policy is run, is that China has just been getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And they're a totally tyrannical society. They've got no respect for democracy at all. The economy in the United States has been devastated, and similar things have happened in Australia and all Western nations which have followed in the path of the same policies. The quality of life of average people is dropping, and our own countries have lurched towards authoritarianism and totalitarianism as well. So it's just been like everyone's been losing. The only people that have been gaining from this are the ultra elites, the super rich, the mega corporations owned by the super elites. And I do believe, and this is really a gut feeling, I can't prove it, but I do believe that Trump, although he is close to being in that category, you might say, is not their best buddy. You know, I think he knows these people. I think he's mingled with them. But I think he's actually turning against them. And they will try to shut him down. But will they go for a Kennedy-style or a McKinley-style lone assassin-type event? And I should have pointed out that with the assassination of McKinley, indeed it was attributed to the lone assassin, even though there was a lot of evidence that he'd been receiving money from some groups that he was associated with, connected to anarchists. But, and there were a lot of other anomalies as well with the death and the surgery that was performed on McKinley. But indeed, the lone assassin myth worked in that instance. It worked with Kennedy. And it's worked many times in the past. Of course, Gandhi was bumped off by a lone assassin, you know, a disgruntled Hindu. Yitzhak Rabin, former Prime Minister of Israel, was assassinated by a disgruntled Zionist. And of course, on the face of it, yes, people are, these people do commit these crimes, but then when you look into it, you see power groups who had so much to gain from this taking place, and you see that these people could be co-opted. People who have extreme views, extremist views, who are often mentally unstable, can be co-opted and used simply as tools of these types of power interests. So, again, returning to Trump, yes, it's possible that something like this could occur, but I suspect that won't happen, because I think that it's now reached a point where it's beyond that. I think that the population, the patriot element in the United States, who are heavily armed, and I think a lot of them are behind Trump, simply would not tolerate another false flag assassination. You know, things have really moved on since 1963, when Kennedy was assassinated, particularly in the last 20 years with the explosion of information via the internet. Many people are much better educated. Of course, most people are still completely brainwashed, you know, couch potatoes, just watching television. That's still the case. Perhaps even more brainwashed than before. But a sizable proportion of our population has become educated, and I probably count myself as one. I learned so much from having access to all the information that is freely out there on the internet to fill in my education, to help me learn about the world. You can't undo that. You know, that's taken place over the last 20 years, not a long period of time. And people know now that they've been tricked. The people know that they've been tricked about 9/11. They don't talk about it very much, but there is a general sense among even the most average people that we were hoodwinked on 9/11. And of course, almost everyone knows that the Kennedy assassination was a conspiracy. So if an attempt were made to eliminate Trump using this old hackneyed old tactic of the lone assassin, I just don't think it would wash. But there are a lot of other ways to eliminate someone. Of course, the man could have an accident. He could have a heart attack. That can also be done, and it's harder to prove one way or the other. He is 69. So really, there are an endless range of ways in which these people could do something to prevent Trump from taking power. And of course, in the event that Trump does get in and does actually do what he says he's going to do, there will be huge changes in our world, some of which could be unpleasant in the short term. And I think we have to be willing to accept that in order for things to get better, they are going to have to get worse. There is risk involved. But for me, I always feel that the risk is worth taking rather than just sinking in like a frog in a pot, you know, of water that's getting hotter and hotter and not doing anything about it. You know, you have to jump around a bit, maybe get burned a little, but ultimately have the chance of getting out of the pot rather than doing nothing. When we come back, I'll cover a few more other points about Trump. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. stay with us. I hope you enjoy the show, and do get back to me if you have any insights or disagreements with anything I say.
What happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it? And at that point...
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. ...created the problem... I want to talk now a little about Trump and Israel. Trump's position on Israel has caused a degree of consternation and has led many people to say that he is nothing more than a manipulated puppet. And a recent article appeared on the Daily Mail that actually has a video, which I'll play for you, where he's talking about Israel, and this is... in a recent interview. This is actually an exclusive interview that he did with the dailymail.com. He said that Israel should continue building West Bank settlements. Now let me just play to you a little of that video clip and I'll give you a few comments on it. Here we go.
I think Israel should have, they really have to keep going. They have to keep moving forward. I'd love to negotiate peace. I think that to me is the all-time negotiation, because if you're talking about a tough negotiation, when somebody says, what's the toughest negotiation? I would say between Israel and the Palestinians would be the toughest. We'll see what happens. But no, I don't think there should be a pause. Look, missiles were launched into Israel, and Israel, I think, never was properly treated by our country. I mean, do you know what that is, how devastating that is? We're missiles, and if they miss one with the incredible technology that we have today, fortunately, but you have hundreds and even, I guess, thousands of missiles being launched into Israel. Who would put up with that? Who would stand for it? Who would put up for it? With all of that being said, I would love to see if peace could be negotiated.
Okay, that is... a recent statement. Now, what's interesting about Trump?
I think Israel should have.
What's interesting about Trump is that he has said completely different things in the past. For example, only in March, he's quoted as saying that he would make Israel pay for defense aid. But when you think about it, is that actually a different position? Is it a flip-flop position, or is it just this and this? Article here from the Times of Israel. Trump says he'll make Israel pay for defense aid. A candidate lumps Jewish state in with other countries that benefit from U.S. security assistance, says they can pay a big league. He says he believes that Israel should pay for the defense aid it receives. He was asked whether he believed the Israeli government should pay for American defense. I think Israel will do that. There are many countries that can pay, and they can pay big league. Now, I don't think, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think any US presidential candidate has ever suggested that Israel should pay for its own defense needs. I mean, this is an extreme position by any measure. And at the same time as that, you know, in different contexts, he's saying, you know, I'm a huge friend of Israel. You know, Israel is very important to me. I think he uses the word ally, but indeed, he sees Israel as an ally, which should pay for its own costs. And when he says that Israel should continue building settlements in the West Bank, he's not saying, hey, we're going to defend you. Like, you know, we're going to come to the rescue if anything bad happens. He's just kind of saying, yeah, you know, go on, keep on building them. Don't stop. Don't stop for me. You know, it's actually quite interesting when you analyze what he's saying. But again, I think the man is quite clever, because he's actually managed to manipulate public opinion to the extent that a lot of people think that his position is very, very pro-Israel. I don't see it as being particularly pro-Israel at all. The characteristic that stands out most with people like Hillary and of course Obama and the Bushes, you know, is their incredibly wishy-washy stance on Israel. You know, their incredible sort of careful diplomatic tactfulness on saying anything. I mean, Trump just comes out and says things. He just comes out and says things quite bluntly. And of course, you know, this statement about expecting Israel to pay for its own defences. Well, of course, if that were to happen, that really would be the end of Israel. Let's face it, they can't afford to pay for that. Israel's military is way beyond what their tiny GDP can actually support. So if Trump comes good on this, I mean, he may say we love Israel, but, you know, he's not going to defend them. So things are going to change. But indeed, you know, we don't know what will really happen. These are all just guesses based on what, you know, the man or the candidate has said about his intentions. But if you go back to the previous presidential campaign, you look at what Obama was saying. Well, you know, in the last phase of the presidential election, Obama pretty well outlined what he was going to do. And this is what they generally do. They do generally outline what they're going to do. And normally, and most people saw it with Obama, that he was being spun to be something he was not. I mean, his own statements were contradictory to the glorification that he received and the Nobel Prize he received in the, you know, very first year of his office, when, in fact, he didn't have any intention of reducing America's militarism. He increased troop commitments. He just pulled some out of Iraq, stuck more in Afghanistan. He didn't shut down Gitmo. He increased Predator drone strikes. He got heavily involved in the Libyan situation and committed support to toppling the Syrian regime. I mean, this guy is just a total militaristic nightmare for the world. So, but all of that was quite clear from what Obama was saying in that early phase before he became president. I think it's very unlikely that Trump will just completely backflip on everything he said. I just don't think, you know, if he were planning to take positions which are more like what Clinton would do or what a Bush would do, then, you know, he wouldn't be saying what he's saying now. It just wouldn't work. His popularity would collapse straight away. He's built his whole campaign on a really radical revolutionary change in American foreign policy. And he's woken a lot of people up. He's built that expectation. And again, he won't be able to let people down that easily once he's done that. It's very important to understand. Now, one last topic to cover for today's show, because we are nearly at the end of the hour, is Trump's position on 9/11 and the secret papers which may link 9/11 to Saudi Arabia. Again, Trump really stands out in that he's the only prominent person out there who is calling for this information to be declassified. Defending his, and I don't want to say prominent person, I mean prominent politician who has a good chance of actually becoming president. Trump says that the secret papers may link 9/11 to Saudi Arabia. Defending his attention-grabbing assertions that the US invasion of Iraq was an enormous mistake facilitated by the Bush administration's misleading of the American people, presidential candidate Donald Trump indirectly referred to 28 classified pages said to link the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia to the 9/11 attacks. Now, this is actually from February of this year. There hasn't been a lot more talk about it, but I expect we'll be hearing more about it again soonish. It will come up again, that's for sure, during the election campaign. And here's a quote from Donald Trump. It wasn't the Iraqis that knocked down the World Trade Center. We went after Iraq. We decimated the country. But it wasn't the Iraqis. You will find out who really knocked down the World Trade Center, because they have papers that are very secret, and you may find it's the Saudis. Okay, but you will find out. Now, of course, nobody knows exactly what's in these redacted pages of the 9/11 Commission. It might just be rubbish. But there's no doubt that the Saudi fingerprints are all over the 9/11 attacks. It's only one part of it. Of course, we know there was an inside job element too. But the suppression of the Saudi involvement is indicative of the inside job. And the fact that that Trump even raises this really makes him stand out again. And let's just consider for a moment what would happen if a full public disclosure occurred that showed what the Saudi involvement in 9/11 really was. Even if it didn't fully expose the conspiracy, even if it didn't fully expose what happened to Building 7 and WTC-1 and WTC-2, but the collusion of the Saudi government would also rope in the NSA, because you see, the NSA were tracking Saudi nationals in the United States. They helped members of the Bin Laden family leave the country secretly immediately after the attacks. The government agencies within the United States did so much to protect Saudis. And the American people are led to believe, well, that's okay, because, you know, we didn't want them to be wrongfully accused. And this is what apologists for the Bush administration have said, is that, you know, we had to protect the Saudis, and we still have to protect the Saudis, because this information in the 9/11 Commission report that's been redacted is actually faulty information. And I think that's what Dick Cheney said. Last point to make, Dick Cheney came out just today and supports Donald Trump. A very, very interesting development. But we are at the end of the hour, and that's our show for this week. I'll be back next week. It's great talking to you. Harold Fenton, Truth News Radio, signing out. See you next week.